You're listening to the Illustration Hour podcast, an interview podcast where I talk to illustrators, art directors, and agents about the craft and business of illustration. My name is Julia Dufossé, and I'm an editorial and commercial illustrator based in Chicago. And I'm chatting with creatives within the world of illustration to learn about their process, the challenges they faced along the way, and how to succeed as an illustrator today. Hello, happy October, everyone. Welcome back to the Illustration Hour. I'm your host, Julia Dufossé, and I'm thrilled to have you join me again this week. Today marks the five-month anniversary for the podcast, and it's all still really new to me, but I'm working hard to get more amazing guests on the show and bring you more valuable content in the coming year. Before I get started on the show for today, I want to let you know about two developments that might enhance your experience of the show. Number one is that I have a weekly newsletter written especially for visual creatives and illustrators. It's called Art Club, and it's short, sweet, and full of stuff you won't find anywhere else. Try it out, take a look, and subscribe at illustrationhour.com/newsletter. Number two, I've added a large repository of all the resources and tools mentioned by past Illustration Hour guests. It's a living list of books, art supplies, and learning resources that I'll be updating every week. If you want to take a look and peruse the tools recommended by people like Thibaut Herrem, Jing Wei, and Seb Agresti, then head on over to illustrationhour.com/resources. Okay, so that's it for all the updates and housekeeping stuff for the podcast. Let's move on to the reason why you're listening to the show in the first place, and that is to learn from the great Thomas D'Anthony. Thomas D'Anthony, you can find him at Thomas D'Anthony on Instagram, and also thomasdanthony.com, his website. Thomas D'Anthony is a French illustrator and artist based in Barcelona and London. Thomas's striking work uses a limited but cohesive color palette and clever composition and lighting to convey a mood or idea. Over the years, Thomas has become famous for his commercial work, alternating big commercial campaigns with Magnum and Hennessy, with some editorial work for the New York Times and a healthy dose of personal projects. Thomas has also been developing his painting to, as he put it in this interview, emulate the way he works digitally, which is very precise and using many layers in Photoshop. Currently, Thomas is represented by the prestigious London-based agency Handsome Frank, which also represents a number of other talented artists like Malika Favre and Thibaut Herrem. He also works with the Paris-based agency Tiffane. So, we talk about Thomas's approach to composition, light, and color, why he values personal projects, and why he thinks his style is driven by his process of doing things. We also talk about why he thinks illustrators should draw things that interest them and that they genuinely like. As always, you'll be able to find all the show notes for this episode on our website, illustrationhour.com/D'Anthony, or you could just click the link in the description for this episode. So, without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Thomas D'Anthony. Hey, Thomas. Thank you for being on the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I'd like to get started by having you describe how you usually introduce yourself to people, maybe people outside the creative world. When they ask you what you do, what do you usually say?
Usually I would say I'm an illustrator because I think it's the easiest words for them to understand, but I actually don't really like to describe myself as an illustrator. I think I'm more like a commercial artist. I think I create picture more than I illustrate in a way. I don't know. That's the way I feel nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Why do you feel that way? What's the distinction between illustration and creating pictures for you?
I don't know. I feel like the way I create picture is kind of a slow process. It's almost like I design them rather than, you know, if you compare with like maybe someone that's a comic artist and I can just like draw perfectly directly in 5 minutes something like a final piece. That's not at all how I work, and it will take me a couple of days to get to or weeks sometime even to get to the final result. So, you know, I don't know. I think it's just a terminology anyway. It's not that important, but
yeah. I mean, because your images, they come out looking, they're quite simple, but at the same time, I think it takes a lot of planning to do what you do.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, and that's a shame, because most of the time clients, or rather bad client, they will just expect simple things to be fast, but it's actually take a lot of time. And in the process, I drew more complicated stuff, and then I try to boil it down to something as simple as possible. So sometimes I even have clients like, can you try to add this or this? And I'm laughing, because I'm like, yeah, I did that during my sketch phase. I can show you. It just removed it because it didn't work, or because it wasn't necessary, or for other reasons.
Yeah, and it's definitely true that I think for you, it seems like there's in some cases, I think for editorial illustration, maybe the concepts are more important than the composition. But for you, it seems to be they're equal, at least.
Yeah, I think it really depends on which project. I also do a little bit of editorial, where for sure the concept is the first thing, but then I really care about the composition, and I don't let go until I'm happy. So, which is a problem also, because sometimes I can just overwork things. But
yeah. So I'd like to talk a little bit about how you started. I guess first off, were you always drawing when you were a kid, or not really?
I've always been like visiting museums and drawing when I was a kid. I drew when I was a kid. I was doing like some kind of painting class when I was, I don't know, 8, 10, something.
Yeah.
And then as a teenager, I would just copy comic books and things like that. More like European kind of comic books. And
like Tintin.
A bit of everything, but yeah, I used to spend ages just like copying some little scene, or you know, just I didn't really know why I was doing it, actually. It's just it was something I liked to do, to isolate myself and do that in my bedroom or something.
Yeah. So after high school, did you know that you wanted to study design or art? Or
well, no, I didn't really know what to do. I always thought a creative career would be cool, but then I remember going to, I think it was like a fair for like where school exhibit, and like you can meet like some teacher and things, and I remember going to a place like that and seeing art school, and I didn't like it. It felt really commercial, and at that point I was just balancing in between different things, and I wanted to be a physio, and then I ended up going to
like a physical therapist.
And then I end up going to university to study physics, which I really hated, actually.
Yeah.
And then from there, so I don't know. In the English system, I don't know, but I got a EUT in materials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And while doing that, I realized that actually doing something creative was probably better for me. So I tried to redirect and switch. And the most logical things was to go to a design school to do product design.
And when you say product design, do you mean like furniture and stuff, or do you mean like
industrial design? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, sometimes product design, I don't know, it can mean, some people use it in that way, but it can also mean like a digital, you know, like.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's what you meant.
Industrial design. Yeah. And it was logical with the knowledge in material, you know, I thought, okay, that's going to be handy. So.
But at the time, what did you think you were going to do with that later?
I thought I would be drawing furniture.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I'd like to do at the time. And
so maybe conceptualize furniture and, yeah.
Yeah, I don't really know.
I
wasn't like really like really projecting. Yeah, yeah. I wasn't really mature in that term. I just thought I would just, you know, graduate and found a job at a company and start drawing furniture.
Mm-hmm.
And then... I did a couple of internships during that period and I liked it, but I was always a bit frustrated with the process. The fact that, you know, you draw a table and then it needs to be developed for like a year, and then maybe the following year it's getting out. And for me, you know, by the time the thing was going out, I was just, you know, completely over it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the time scale didn't really fit with my personality, I guess. But I
and
didn't
it's a
really
very
realize.
Collaborative process too. It's not something you create by yourself usually.
Yeah, definitely. But that wasn't the problem for me. So basically, when I graduated, it was in the south of France, so I kind of thought I had to go to Paris to, you know, find work or try to do something.
And what kind of work were you looking for at that time? You were looking for work in the furniture kind of?
Yeah. Well, furniture or lighting or...
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, well, London is not that far. It's just a little bit further. So maybe I can just go to London and learn to speak a bit better. And, you know, so I decided to do that. And when I arrived to London, I did a lot of small job. I did a bit of graphic design. I worked in fashion a little. And then I kind of realized pretty quickly that illustration was a thing, which for some reason I never really considered. I knew graphic design and everything, but I don't know, in France, or at least at that time, illustration wasn't really something that crossed my radar. And I knew there were like comic artists, and I knew there were like kind of caricature artists and people doing video games or animation, but I didn't really understood that there was like a commercial illustration career possible.
Yeah. Did that knowledge come from people you met in London or?
Yeah. I think I went to a lot of, you know, openings and exhibition, and I followed the creative scene, and I just discovered that illustration was a thing.
Yeah.
And I also realized that actually I have been doing illustration forever. I just didn't know it was. So, and then I remember seeing someone. I did a little book at that time, a personal project, and I showed it to someone that worked in kids' book. And she was like, yeah, this is great. I don't think we can publish it, but I think you clearly want to do illustration. So I think you should like contact illustrator you admire. And just get in touch with them and ask them how they got there.
Yeah.
And I think it was really crucial because that's what I did.
Who did you contact?
So I contacted Malika Favre.
Oh, I'm not surprised. I can definitely see how your work would just echoes her work a little bit.
And she was really nice, and we quickly became friends. And I think since then she has been kind of my mentor. She introduced me to everything, and, you know, every time I had a tricky question, I would, you know, be able to ask her and get, like, insight from someone that was in place before me.
So she was living in London at the time, right?
Yes. Yeah. And so that helped were able me to meet hugely.
Her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was her career, had her career picked up at that point, too? Or because she kind of had a meteoric kind of rise at some point.
Yeah, I think she was still at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. Because now she's just a just massive. Like
she is.
Yeah. Yeah. So she was successful, but still at the beginning.
Yeah, I guess. And that's also how I met my first agent, John from Anson Frank. And that was also a second person that I met that helped me get to where I am now. I was, you know, I had like three images in my portfolio.
Yeah. Do you remember what Malika told you in the beginning when you came to her, when you were starting out and you came to her for advice?
I don't remember anything specific, but
yeah,
she probably told me something like, you know, do personal projects and draw what you like, and that's going to drive clients to commission you to draw what you like or something along those lines.
Did you establish a relationship with her where you would show her images or
ask her
for feedback? Yeah.
Yeah, not really asking for feedback, but yeah, I would ask. It would be more. I would show my stuff, course, but it would be more about how to approach clients, how to, you know, price work, negotiate, what is a normal thing to accept from a client, what is not. You know, things that even if I had studied illustration, I would probably not know anyway.
And still now this information it's actually quite hard to get,
and also because people act very differently, it's also a personality thing. I don't think there's like one way to behave, or I mean, you know, different on different projects you work with different person, and you know, like every situation is always different, so what you need to learn is to adapt and how to, you know, put your own boundaries. And
yeah, but as far as pricing, it's true that there are some, I guess, some standards that a younger illustrator might not know kind of exist, that you shouldn't go lower than a certain standard sometimes, or that it's not normal, at least.
Yeah, and pricing is really tricky because there is no, you know, we are paid per project, so it doesn't really matter the time you spend on it.
Or yeah, right.
The only thing that actually matters is how much the client is ready to put to have you. That's what it is.
Yeah, and it's true that now also in illustration, it's very common for clients to ask for images in perpetuity. And they don't necessarily compensate for that.
Yeah, that's actually something that's became more and more common. And that's, you know, that's really something people need to know about and how it works, because,
yeah,
you know, you can't just sign your right off for a little bit of money. This has like massive implication about like what they can do with it. And
Yeah. It's something that I was unaware of for a very long time and didn't realize it was written into a contract and what it really means. And it's insane to sign away the rights to an image for the amount of money that sometimes you get for a project. And it's just, I didn't even know that it was okay to say no, you know, or to negotiate something that might be more suitable for that.
I think that's the kind of things I learned by working with agents. Like I was saying, I also met John from Anson Frank very early on, and they decided to trust me and to give me my chance. And very fast, I got
So they clients. Signed you on when you started?
Yes.
Mm,
I think my first, my maybe my second commission was with them already.
Okay, yeah.
And it's their expertise on this kind of contract that's, you know, you... That's what you pay for when you have an agent. You have like this kind of negotiation power and this knowledge about contract that if you learn by yourself, then you're going to make a few mistakes before you can get it right.
Yeah, yeah. Handsome Frank is very known as being one of the top agencies for illustrators. I think they're based in France, right? In Paris?
No, they're in London.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, and they're Maliko's agents too, right? Handsome Frank.
Yes. Well, yeah. I think you know, like also with agents, you need to have like the right relationship with them. It's some agents will work with some artists, and you know, it needs to be the right personality for the right artist. Mm-hmm. And you know, John has been a really good match for me, I think. So I'm not gonna complain.
Yeah. So let's get back to the beginning. So you reach out to Maliko, and I imagine you worked on creating more images for your portfolio. Did you have a plan for the kind of work that you wanted to get at that time? And did you contact people?
Not really. I think I probably emailed a couple of art directors. But at the very beginning, I think most of my work was coming from Anson Frank.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were getting commercial work from
Yeah, Hansen, a bit of everything, some editorial and a little bit of advertising also.
Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy working? Did you enjoy your first few commissions, or was it hard? Was it?
I don't know. I can't really remember actually.
That probably means you probably didn't have any major issues, because people usually remember when it was just a mess in the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, it was very difficult because, you know, I was starting out and I didn't want to disappoint. So I was giving myself 100%. But, you know, that was a struggle for sure. But it went okay, I think. Probably also because I was always working, you know, I studied a bit of science. Then I was a product designer. So I think maybe it's a bit more structured than some, you know, other illustrators' process. So maybe that helped me. I never had like problem with deadlines or anything like that, for example. I don't know. I'm kind of structured that way.
How about your style? Was it kind of similar to what your style is like now? Or were you still developing that? Weren't totally sure.
It's definitely evolving still, but I think... it's really weird because people say they spend a lot of time working on finding their own voice and everything. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for me it happened in one image. I wanted to create that image, and I worked for a long time on it, maybe like 2 weeks or something. And mm-hmm. and you know, I stopped when I was happy with the results, and I was like, this. It was driven by a process also. It wasn't just like about finding the right look. I think the look of it is driven by the process heavily. And I don't know, I finished it and I was like, right, this is what I want to do. And yeah. And they seem to have like a market for it straight away. I don't really know. Like, I guess I got lucky.
When you say that the image was driven by the process, what do you mean exactly?
Well, I never learned illustration at school, so I didn't really mm-hmm. know what I was doing. I knew how to use Photoshop to retouch picture, and I knew how to use Illustrator to make plans and things, but I probably still use it really badly. And I think the fact that I maybe don't use it like it's supposed to be used maybe forced me to do certain type of stylistic choice
mm-hmm.
that I think probably pushed me toward what I do, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean.
So how do you use it, and if it's, you think it's not?
Well, it changed a little bit since, but yeah, I mainly at that time I was using Illustrator and Photoshop as a combination. So I would go from one to the other to use.
Like making shapes in Illustrators and then transferring them to Photoshop or something?
Yeah, and then back, and it was a back and forth, which is a bit silly, really. It's a lot of lost time. But, you know, I don't really know. It just happened like that. At that time, I didn't really think I found my style or anything like that. I was just drawing things I like to draw, and really quickly there was a clear pattern, and I was drawing things I liked. And you know, that very first illustration, it's called Sunset, and it was a picture of an observatory to mm-hmm. look at the stars with mountain in the background, and that was just the channeling of things I like. I like being in the mountains, and you know, so I just try to depict mountain as I like them, and that's just how it came out, I guess.
Yeah, your images now have a kind of very distinct way. You have a distinct way of handling composition, light, shadow, but also colors. Was it already something that you kind of mastered at the time, or because it seems to me that that's something you would have to learn over a lot of practice, especially the colors.
Well, I wouldn't say I was mastering anything back then, yeah. But I still don't know if I do now. But you can see the light was important already. Mm-hmm. It was all about like subtle gradients. So yeah, it's the foundation are still the same.
Yeah,
I hope I just improved it.
Yeah. In how many images did you have in your portfolio when Handsome Franks signed you on?
I wouldn't know for sure, but maybe 10 maximum. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I want to talk more about composition and how you usually like come up with your composition, because it seems to be so central to your work. And I imagine it takes a lot of trial and error to find the right composition for the right story or the right idea. How do you usually work with that? How do you work when you get a brief? How do you start getting ideas about what to do with the composition, the image?
It really depends on the brief, how open it is. You know, if it's like an editorial where it's really idea driven, or if it's more like commercial work. But I would say if I have to do a generality thing, I would start like in a little notebook and do like small thumbnails, you know, pencil and maybe black to just have like two tones. Then from there, I kind of know which idea works, and then I kind of redraw them in Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time it's actually not working, or I ended up doing something else. But, you know, that's the starting point.
Mm-hmm. What do you look for in those thumbnails to refine? Like, how do you pick the one that you then refine in Photoshop?
Well, it's about communication. It needs to convey what I need. So whether it's like a specific idea or a mood or something that happens in a story, or so yeah, it needs to communicate what I want in the easiest way possible.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of your images rely on this kind of almost like obscuring things or enlarging them in ways that you're not used to seeing them, or lighting them in a way that's peculiar, gives a certain mood. Is that something you've thought about very consciously, or is that just the way that you just naturally gravitate towards illustrating things?
Yeah, I think it's just natural. I don't really think about specific things. I just try to, you know, create a composition that work and that's as, you know, bold as possible.
Do you usually have an idea of the colors at the thumbnail stage or no?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I used to sketch in color in Photoshop, but nowadays I sketch in black and white mainly.
Why have you stopped that?
I think colors was limiting me too much. I would sketch in colors and be very frustrated because it doesn't look good and I can't convey what I want. And actually, it was just the color that were wrong, maybe not the composition. So now I split that. And first, I look at the light, the composition, and then I can just pick the colors. But it's tricky because some picture I would love in black and white and struggle to find the right colors for it. So it's...
Yeah. It's you. Are you confident in your drawing abilities? Because I know a lot of illustrators I talk to are not necessarily very confident in their drawing, but they're confident in their ability to transform their drawings digitally or to convey an idea in that way.
I can draw okay. I'm not like a fantastic draftman. I think I was probably better at drawing when I was doing product design, in a way, drawing more accurate things. But yeah, that's also why I can kind of prefer calling myself a commercial artist, because I create pictures, I design them more than of course I draw them, but I'm not, you know, I'm not a draft man, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Do you use reference images when you work usually?
Yeah, of course. No? Of course. Sometimes I shoot them myself, you know, like with my phone or with my computer.
Uh-huh.
Or sometimes I just find some reference online. You know, it's a big mix of things.
Is that also how you study light usually, or is that not really how you do it?
No, usually light is just like, I just wing it, and it's probably wrong sometimes, but it's just, yeah, you know, well, if it looks all right.
The point isn't it for it to be accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so it's funny because Malika has a similar way of handling light and shadows. Or at least they feature very prominently as they do in your work. Have you ever talked about that kind of like affinity that you share with her?
Not specifically. I think what we share is that we want everything to be pixel perfect, and you know, I spend sometimes hours drawing tiny stuff that nobody will see. I want every shape and every curve to be perfect. You know, it won't be seen. There's like maybe 80% of what I do that nobody will see. But it just makes me happy that it's there, I guess. It's a bit crazy.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I think Malika probably shared that also.
Uh-huh. So a certain perfectionism and yeah.
Yeah, which can be a problem also, you know. Sometimes I refine a sketch and the client get confused and they're like, but is it the final? And mm-hmm. I'm like, no, that's just a sketch. And they're confused because it's, you know, some people wouldn't see the difference.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's, you know, like you need, in a way it's good and bad. If you have a mental structure that helps you, you know, divide tasks and it's good, but it can be bad because then it restrains you from letting go and letting the magic happen. So you need to mix both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to know when to let go and when to take back control.
Mm-hmm. And you do quite a fair bit of painting, at least for your personal work, not for your commercial work. And I imagine that kind of like takes a wholly different kind of amount of skill to do that, and it's a very different process. Do you find that helpful for your work in general?
It's actually a very similar process, but because I decided, I think it was in 2015, and I was having my first solo show in Paris.
Yeah,
and I decided I wanted to do something physical because I was spending way too much time in front of the computer. But then I was like, technically, I don't know how to paint.
Yeah. Had you never painted really before? Or?
No, not really. I mean, when I was a kid, I would do scribbles. But, you know, that's not painting. And so I kind of, well, I don't know if I really created it, but I experimented until I found the process that I liked. And I used a lot of stencil for that, and basically I replicated what I was doing on the computer, but with like physical tools.
Yeah. So you use stencils to make everything sort of pixel perfect in the way that you would digitally?
Yeah, yeah. So mm-hmm. I would draw on the computer also at the beginning, do all the sketching on the computer,
mm-hmm.
and then create some stencils, but it was a big mix of like small brushes, big brushes, rollers, some freehand, some with stencil. It was a big mix, but basically, I was trying to replicate what I was doing on the computer, and it took me, I think, maybe more than a year to do something that I was happy with. And then I used that technique for a while, and it allowed me to do like multiple uniques. So I would do small painting with gouache using that technique, and
mm-hmm.
each painting will be an edition of three. But of course, since they are done by hand, like the color may vary a little or some. So But it made sense since I use stencil to use what stencil give me, which is like the fact that I can kind of reproduce the shape one or twice or three times. So I kind of had that kind of hybrid paintings that were like a tiny series, but you know, it was really hard to market.
Yeah. It's kind of like a handmade printing kind of method.
That takes a lot of time to make. Yeah.
And it's also similar to the way that maybe airbrush artists would use stencils, I guess.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. I think probably the same, except that I wasn't using any airbrush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so for a few years I did that, and now I'm kind of going away from it and trying new things with bigger format, with acrylic. I'm experimenting a lot more.
At the time you were using just gouache?
Yes.
Yeah.
Gouache on paper.
Uh-huh. Do you remember what type of paints you used? Or like what?
I think probably some Winsor & Newton. Uh-huh. But it doesn't really matter.
No, yeah. But yeah, I think people are usually interested in the tools.
Yeah, that's what I would find in London at the local.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. Why did you pick gouache for that? Was that something you thought about a lot, or?
I didn't like acrylic because it was shiny and plasticky, and gouache has a really nice texture to it. You can do some very opaque flat area pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
But also so you're some transparency.
Looking for something matte, and
yes, yeah. And also it's matte, and the shiny thing in the really put me off. Basically, I wanted them to look like jiggly on matte paper, basically.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. And for as far as the colors, did you mix colors yourself, or did you use colors straight from a bottle? Like, because that's a whole different kind of skill set to mix your own colors.
I was mixing the colors, unless like there's like one color that would fit perfectly out of the bottle, but it's not very often.
And I imagine that can also transfer to the way that you do your illustration digitally, just the knowledge that you get from mixing your own colors.
Yeah, well, digitally, I never use any preset colors. I always start with like a blank canvas and mix everything new for each image. So it's a lot of trial and error, right? You pick a blue, then you pick another one, and maybe after 200 blue is the right one.
In your colors, I mean, in your work that's digital, do you tend to like get inspired by other artists and sort of like catalog palettes of certain artists that you like, or not really?
For the colors?
Yeah.
No. No, not really.
You just kind of use this trial and error kind of process?
Yeah, I think. I don't know. Yeah, I think it's just I'm naturally drawn to some type of colors, and I don't know. I just like them, so they keep popping up, and I try to use like different colors, but I tend to like come back to the same kind of tone often.
Yeah, I think that's quite true of your work. Yeah, do you find that people ask you for specific colors sometimes, clients? I mean.
Yes, a lot of people, like when they think about my work, they think about blue, and so a lot of clients. Sometimes I will do a sketch another color, and they would be like, "Yeah, but can we have your signature blue?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah, sure." I mean, it's not really so. At the beginning, maybe it started with me liking these colors, but also. And the clients, they are channeling what I do, so they keep me in the loop. So if I don't force myself to use different colors, then I'm kind of condemned to use the same tones for life.
Yeah, that could be frustrating.
Yeah, and to get back to what I was saying at the beginning, that personal project drive. Commercial project, that's also the way you can change these things. You know, if you want to introduce something new in your work, then you need to implement it, and then if clients like it, they will ask for this type of things, and Yeah. That's how you can get out.
Are you constantly making time for personal work? I know you're very busy with client work and other type of things that you're doing, but do you tend to like have a set kind of like routine for creating personal work?
No, I don't do enough personal work right now, but it's always like sometimes you manage to block some time for it, but you know, it's essentially you have the drive when you're too busy, or you know, it's never really easy to align the time for personal and for commercial work. So I think the best way is just to take time off. Like, let's say you take a month or 3 months off and you don't take any commission. That's the best way to do it, but that's also a luxury, and it can be tempting to take commission. So it's quite tricky to find the balance, I think. I still struggle with that.
Yeah. And so what do you tend to do when you get a brief and you can't get inspired, or you can't find the right idea or the right way to depict that mood or atmosphere?
Well, it never really happens. I mean, like, of course, sometimes you get frustrated and it just doesn't work as fast as you would have liked. Or sometimes you get a brief and you picture straight away something and then you try it out and it doesn't work and you feel stuck. But I mean, it's just about keep trying until you find what works. That's the trick with what we do. We don't really have a choice. We need to deliver something that's like at the maximum capacity on every project. So it's, it's a bit like athletes, you know, they have to deliver at every competition. And that's the way I feel about the work also.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so I know that you said in a couple of weeks before we started that you are organizing a show in London. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so my partner and I, Claire Mabin, we, you know, like I said before, I like to go outside. I do a lot of climbing. I've been climbing for more than 20 years.
Yeah.
So I like to go outside, and nature is a big part of my life. And the way it's going is just making us sad, you know, and like past the when you realize like how much we are fucking up and how depressing it is, we were like, okay, even though we have like lifestyle that are already pushed to the max of what we can do, we decided to do something more. And so we started thinking about what could be, and pretty quickly we thought of that. I thought I could use my network with artist and her skill in organizing stuff and create a charity show to raise money. It's called Touchwood. It's in collaboration with the World Land Trust, who is a charity in UK that buys endangered lands and habitats to protect them and to manage them, and also plant trees, so reforestation work.
Yeah.
So we are collaborating with them, and we are gonna send them all the benefits from the show, basically.
Yeah. And when is the show? Do you have a set date yet?
Yes. So the show is on the 17th of October in the Old Truman Brewery in London.
Uh-huh.
And it's from the 17th to the 20th. But the opening is on the 17th.
Is it free to attend for people who are in?
Yes,
in the
it
UK?
Is free to attend.
Okay.
For the opening, there is like an Eventbrite thing where you have to register.
Okay. Yeah, I'll share that in the show notes as well.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be great because there's 50 artists that are all pretty well known internationally. Of course, there's some of our friends like Malika, but also we have Jean Julien, we have legendary Nathalie Dupasquier, we have a lot of really exciting artists, and they all created an original piece for the show.
Is there a theme, or were people, were they free to choose what they really wanted to draw?
There is a theme, but it was quite open. So it's called Touchwood because you know that expression where, you know, you touch food and you get luck. And so we kind of use that and say, okay, we need to get a bit of luck to sort out the crisis we're in now, but also touching wood is reconnecting with nature physically. So the support they are using is MDF board. So basically it's recycled wood. That we, of course, sourced, and it's FSC certified and all that. So basically all these artists, they will get that wood board and they could do whatever they wanted with it. So some painted it, some did some sculpture. We also have some designers. So you know, it's pretty wide. And the only brief they had is like, we wanted to know how they feel about nature, whether they are depressed, like contemplative, you know, if it's poetic, you know, whatever is their connection, their personal connection with nature. So it's pretty wide, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you mentioned that you really enjoy climbing. Is that something you've done for a really long time or?
Yeah, I would say like, yeah, a bit more than 20 years.
Uh-huh.
So it's a long time.
Yeah. Is it for you, is climbing a big part of also of how you like get ideas for illustration or not?
No, but it's a really important part of my life. And, you know, I climb maybe like 4 times a week.
Always outside?
No, it's a mix. But I train seriously. I, you know, I dedicate a lot of time to it. And for me, it's really important as a, you know, mental health balance to not be just like at my desk every day, all the time, day and night. So it's really good. And climbing allows me to not think about work at all. Like when you're climbing, I don't know if you tried that before, but.
Well, you have to plan what you're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't really think about something else. You need to be 100% in the moment. And I think it's probably true for other things like surfing or I don't know, but it's a kind of lifestyle and you need to be 100% focused on what you're doing. And it's a really creative sport also.
How so?
I don't know. I don't want to talk badly about runners, but you know, running is like the same movement over and over again. Even though the path can change. There's small variation, but climbing, every movement is different. Every hold is different because they are created by nature. So you need to understand how you're gonna use your body to solve the problem, basically.
Mm-hmm. So do you do quite a bit of bouldering as well, or?
Yeah, I used to boulder a lot. Now. That I moved back to Barcelona, I do more routes, but yeah, bouldering is my first love for sure.
Because that's more about finding a route and right or no?
They are both about like solving a problem. Mm-hmm. It's like a puzzle. It's a bit like a video game in a way. You need to like find your to use your body to the best abilities to solve a problem with what you're given, whether it's like indoor, outdoor, you're given a set of holds and you have to get to the top, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the experience of, you know, if you climb for a long time, then you know a lot of different movements that are possible. And then you need to like kind of use what you know to, you know, find the solution on that specific climb. So, yeah, it's really creative.
Yeah, for me, it would be hard to do just because I have a fear of height, but I assume that would go away also.
Yes.
Maybe.
I used to be a coach when I was younger, and that definitely go away.
Really?
We are just not used to height, but it's something you can get used to. It's healthy to be scared of height.
Uh-huh. Yeah. 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 I don't know if it's always healthy, but yeah. And so do you currently live in Barcelona?
Well, I'm still in between London and Barcelona, but yeah, I'm gonna move permanently very soon.
Uh-huh. Why did you decide to move to Barcelona? Was there a reason in particular?
Because I'm from the south of France. I'm from Montpellier, so it's pretty close actually. And
why not move to Montpellier then?
It's too French, it's too small. I needed something more international where I can, you know, get what I need. But in the same time, I wasn't ready to go back to France. And here you have a easy access to the sea, to the mountains. Catalonia is actually like one of the best places in the world for climbing also. So it's not, so it's one of the reasons also to be able to go climbing outside a lot, and the weather is fantastic. So for us, it was really the city in Europe that was the most attractive.
Is it also in terms of the creative community, is it a pretty vibrant scene or?
Yeah, it's pretty good. Of course, it's smaller than London, but yeah, I mean, Barcelona has always been like a city that has been like a kind of a pioneer in the arts and historically, I mean. And yeah, it is definitely a creative city. I think the vibe here is really good. And yeah, for me, it's a bit home outside of home, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I want to talk more about your day-to-day routine, if you have a routine, if you like to keep like a certain amount of the day dedicated to work or not really. Yeah.
Yeah, I wake up every day at the same hour. I tend to try to do office hours, more or less.
So what time do you usually wake up every day?
8.
Okay. And then what time do you start working?
8:10.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah.
No, but yeah, I mean, it depends. But yeah, I tend to get to work pretty fast. And mm-hmm. And yeah, try to, you know, it's very flexible because obviously I'm freelancing, but I tend to have like that structure that I try to keep in place because it's really easy to get out of wind, to just work every weekend. And that's just like on the long run, it's just not something that works.
Yeah.
For me, at least. I don't work late at night.
When do you stop working?
Either when I'm done with the task I had for the day or you know, when I can't do anymore and when I'm just tired and, you know, it's not going anywhere, I just stop there. But of course, it depends. Sometimes you have deadline and there's just no real choice. Sometimes, you know, like you say, you get stuck and you need to just keep pushing until you find something.
Do you also set specific times to handle tasks like emailing and, you know, like all the business side of illustration?
No, I mix everything, which is actually probably not the most clever thing because you're drawing and then you have emails popping. Mm-hmm. But I'm not that organized. I need a structure, but I'm not that organized.
Well, you sit at your desk and you definitely do work-related tasks, but you might not compartmentalize creative work versus administrative or business tasks.
Yeah.
Do you think you spend a lot of time like emailing? And because I know a lot of illustrators, freelance, who complain about that side of it.
I think actually the actual drawing is not the most time. Maybe, I don't know, maybe 20% of the time. I don't know. That sounds crazy.
So you would say that most of the time is spent going back and forth with clients and handling tasks like that?
Yeah, and thinking, trying to plan, and, you know, trying to explain things. And yeah, it takes a lot of time in general. I don't know, maybe 20% is a bit too low. I don't know. It really depends because sometimes you're deep in a project, everything is rolling, so you can actually draw for like, you know, most of the day. But then there will be like a couple of days where you're stuck on emails for the whole day. So
yeah,
it's hard to. But yeah, I try to keep a structure. I don't work weekends anymore. I mean, if I do, then I do a swap. I will take a day from the week.
Do you find that having an agent helps in that? In that way, that with the business side of things and also, I guess, the administrative side of things?
It does, but you still, you know, it saves time on some things, mm-hmm. but then there is a lot of the work that you still need to do. I mean, you still need to, whether you communicate directly with the client or with your agent, you still communicate something to someone.
Right.
So it's still, you know, but what it helps at is probably to be less stressed about quoting, about this kind of stuff.
Because your agent usually makes that decision about quoting a price, or is that something you have a conversation with your agent?
In my case, In my case, I have two agencies. I have one in France with Tiffen and one in UK with John at Handsome Frank.
Mm-hmm.
And they work differently. And I know they work differently with each of their artists. So I think it's really like a relationship-based kind of deal. And it works differently with everybody. And I also do a lot of job directly with clients.
Yeah.
So it really depends.
Do you find that most of your clients are from the UK or from France or from somewhere else? Do you have an idea of where most of your clients come from, or is it really just all over the place?
I have a lot of clients in the US.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, yeah, Europe. I would say UK, France, a little bit of Spain.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I work punctually on with like Japanese or Australian or whatever, but like mainly it's these countries.
It's sort of interesting to see the geographical distribution of where particular artists are finding work. Sometimes it's sort of like it's very clear.
I think it's down to what I do. Also, I do a lot of advertising, and you know the advertising market in the US is just
it's huge, yeah,
way bigger. So I think it's probably one of the reasons.
How much of your work comes from editorial kind of illustration? Not so much, or
nowadays it's like I don't know 20%, 10%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so not that much. Was it more in the beginning?
Little. Yes, it was a lot more in the beginning, but it's you know, like I like to do editorial, but you know the budgets are way lower, and
the
way I work is it's not that it's slow, but it takes time.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, like it's more worth it most of the time to do something commercial with advertising. I think it's just fit my style better.
Yeah,
but it doesn't mean I don't like working with editorial. I love to do, you know, a quick one for the New York Times, or you know, to change things, to do something faster, or you know, that's what is nice with what we do, is that we can have a lot of diversity. And if we do the same thing over and over, then it's just boring.
Can you talk a little bit more about one of your projects? I think maybe the one that you did with Magnum, how you got that project and sort of what the project was all about, how you worked on it.
So it was an advertising campaign for Magnum, the ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it started like we've been talking for a while, and the first brief I got wasn't that interesting. And then they came back a couple of months later, and they had that brief, which was a bit crazy, which was basically so free that I couldn't believe it. They just asked me to use the iconic shape of the Magnum and to associate it with pleasure, basically. And that's about it.
Okay.
And from there, they were like, just do your thing, create like, I think it was 5 or 6 ads.
Mm-hmm. And did you know what they were going to use them like in what context that we were going to use them?
Yeah, they were supposed to be like on billboards, on murals across Europe.
So large scale, yeah.
Yeah, very large scale. And usually when you work on this type of big project, it's, you know, in advertising, it's not always the case, but most of the case, the clients, the agency already sent like a quick scan to the client, and they signed that off before they even hire an illustrator. So basically, you get a brief where there's already a scan. So, okay, can you draw that girl holding a cup of tea or whatever?
Yeah.
It's, sometimes it can be really frustrating because it's not that interesting.
Because you're just basically executing somebody else's idea.
I mean, it can be good also, you know, but, you know, it's less interesting for sure. And sometimes there's flexibility. You can get that and push them to introduce more things, and sometimes it works. So, you know, it's not having a starting point is not necessarily bad. But here it was really, really open. And basically they wanted to collaborate with me rather than just commission me. So it was really nice. And it was also a lot of pressure, because getting that much freedom on such a big project was a bit tough. But I had a lot of pleasure working on it. And I think, you know, it got lots of awards. He got like Cannes Lions and I think like maybe 15 different awards just for this project. So it felt good. It was well received.
It's of course a lot of exposure for you as well.
Yeah, a lot of exposure, but also very well paid. So when you can combine everything, money, fun, exposure, interesting thing, then
sort of a perfect project.
Yeah, definitely like a perfect project.
How much time did you spend working on that?
I think it was over 2 months. I can't really remember.
How many rounds of revisions of kind of like feedback and then revision?
Too many.
But how many tens do you have? Is there a general number of rounds that you kind of write into your contracts, or not really?
There is, but it's never really, you know, sometimes it's less, sometimes it's a bit more. It depends how big are the change. If it's like to restart from scratch or just like remove a little detail, it's obviously not the same.
So for the Magnum project, how many do you think you had?
Well, the thing is, like, I had so much freedom that I did some sketches, and basically they basically approved everything.
Okay.
Almost all the time, it was a lot of back and forth, but like talking about little details, they would ask me to change something, and I would do it and do another version. Why I would explain why my solution was better. So you know, it was all this back and forth, and essentially I had.
How would you usually convince them that your idea is better? Like, do you usually do that over email or?
Yeah, the better is to show them. You do a sketch and they want some change, so you do the change and you also do another version that you think is better.
Okay, yeah. So you do what they want and then you do what you want and you show them both.
Yeah, or you know, sometimes you can also talk about it before. It depends how complicated it is to change, but yeah, like. If you show them and it's genuinely better, then most of the time they will just agree. But sometimes there's other factors that you don't know. You know, maybe it's a no-no with the client for some reason. Maybe it's too similar to like their competitor and you don't know it because, you know, for some reason. So it's not always working, but you know. So to get back to the Magnum project, I had to do very little concession. So that was really good.
Do you usually work mostly with marketing directors, and who are the kind of people that you work with when you work on these big commercial projects like that in advertising?
Yeah, some creative director or directors. Yeah. It goes through agencies most of the time.
Yeah. So you work with the agency more directly?
Yeah, here the agency was Lola Mullenlo in Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's been a pleasure to work with them on this project.
Yeah, so I want to talk more about maybe if you have any advice for young illustrators, for people who might be starting out or who may be a little further along but who are still beginning their career.
Yeah, I think they need to draw what they like, you know, and not be too pushed by time, because right now everything seems to be really fast, and you know, with Instagram you can draw something, post it, get immediate feedback, and but I think this is not gonna last first.
And
also, you know, that's, you know, don't fall for cheap trends, or you know, it might work now but it won't last, and you know, it's way better to have a solid base, draw things you like, have a connection between the thing you draw and the thing you like in life, you know, not, you know, you know, let's say you like mountain and you only draw cars, it's just...
Yeah, it has to be a genuine... Yeah,
yeah, at some point you're going to get sick of it. So if you do something that's genuine and that you like, then it's less likely than you will get bored, and you will also get more inspiration, and because you just like are around this kind of stuff. So yeah, I would say do something you like, and you know,
How do you push yourself to kind of evolve and get better when you, I mean, because it's easy to get complacent when you're doing something you enjoy. Do you have a way that you really push yourself in that way?
I would say I push myself on every project.
Yeah.
And that's also, it is good and bad. Like, basically every new project I take on, I want it to be the best picture I ever drawn.
Okay.
So I push really hard, and it, you know, it's only in the end you're gonna know. But I this is my goal, and most of the time, of course, I'm disappointed, but I tried, and yeah, that's the way I approach like new pictures.
Yeah. When you look back at your past work, are you quite critical of it, or are you just happy?
I don't know. Yes. Some of my early work is still good. Some stuff, you know, I know why I don't like it, or why, yeah. You know, maybe it was some feedback I had to implement, or, you know, mm-hmm. like, but in general, I think, you know, I'm not really, you know, I'm not ashamed by anything I've put out there. Of course, I don't show everything I do. I show what I'm happy with. So, of course, sometimes you do a project and you just don't like the result. And even if you push really hard and try to explain everything you thought, sometimes, you know, they either need something different, or, you know, your interest doesn't really align with their interest. So that's also okay. But, you know, that's not what you're going to advertise in your portfolio, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. Is that is there a way that you use Instagram? You mentioned Instagram a little bit earlier, but is Instagram quite important to you getting clients now, or do you sort of approach Instagram with a grain of salt and you don't focus on it too much?
I tend to put more and more salt on Instagram, if it makes sense.
Yeah.
I used to think it was really important, and it is really, because sometimes literally people will come with you with a pricing for a project based on your number of followers.
And, yes, yeah.
And that's fucked up.
Well, that's an unfortunate trend, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's a thing, and, you know, Instagram with the algorithm and everything, more and more I'm a bit tired of it, because it's going to prioritize things that are easy to like, you know, whether it's baby cats or boots, it's always going to do better than whatever picture you're going to draw.
Yeah.
So it's not designed for artists to do things. And especially if you do some experiments that are a bit different from what you do, you're going to post them and you're going to get, well, it's going to get buried. It's not that you're not going to get a lot of likes. It's just that they're not even going to show it to like more than 5% of your followers.
Yeah.
And then you're going to think maybe it's not good, but actually, no, it's the robot that decided it wasn't worth showing because maybe it's too different. Doesn't mean it's not good. And, you know, it's really easy to get depressed or just think maybe that's not good. I shouldn't pursue. So, you know, like, Instagram is an amazing tool to put stuff out there, but it's also an amazing tool to like keep you at doing what you do and get, you know, easy likes. For example, if you post a really good illustration about a subject that's horrible,
yeah,
you're not going to get likes, so it's not going to be shown to a lot of people. It doesn't mean the work is bad. It's just about something difficult.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
If you post a picture that's about love, then you're going to get like a lot of likes. It doesn't mean the picture is good.
It
just means that your followers are like in a good mood or whatever.
Yeah, and it's also just shareable. And that doesn't mean it's good. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's an amazing tool, but, you know, it's tricky. And also, you know, the fact that you don't even know if you follow someone, you don't even know if you're seeing the content. It's a bit worrying, I think, for me.
Yeah. We're almost out of time, but I wanted to ask you a few kind of like easy rapid fire questions.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So the first one is, do you have a favorite color? And if so, what is it?
Well, I feel like I have to say blue.
Yeah.
Like that's what everybody seems to think, but I don't know if I really have a favorite color. It depends on how they are used.
Do you have a favorite pen?
No. I discovered the iPad recently, so I'm gonna say that, but it's very temporary, I think.
Do you sketch on the iPad?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you use Procreate or?
Yeah, I use Procreate.
Yeah. Do you have favorite paints? You mentioned before the Winsor & Newton gouache,
yeah.
But
yeah,
you said now you use more acrylics.
Yeah, but I don't have a very specific brand that I like.
Why did you suddenly start liking acrylics after hating, you know, the plasticky look of it before?
It's about scale. It's just that gouache is tiny pots, and if you want to paint a massive painting, it would be incredibly expensive, and it's just not designed for big surface. So I kind of was pushed to try something new.
Have you find acrylics that kind of satisfy you and that are matte enough, I guess, to...
Yeah, and also I used to work on paper, and now I'm working on wood, and I'm also starting to look at canvas. So I think it's also really dependent on the surface and the way you work with the paints. I definitely do the same with acrylic as I was doing with gouache, is that I probably don't use them how they're supposed to be used.
Do you still use stencils? And
I tend to get away from stencils now, but I never been taught how to paint with acrylic, and you know, despite the millions of videos on YouTube that I'm sure explain that very well, I think it's really hard. So basically I kind of do experiment and find my own way to do things, and it's probably really silly or really, like, you know, take way too long time, but I think I actually know, like, the fact that I don't know how to do it properly, because it pushed me to do something different in a way. Like, my process will dictate kind of the final look in a way. So maybe the fact that I don't really know how to paint will help me getting something more interesting or different. I don't know. This is definitely the way I thought about my gouache painting before, and also about my digital work, actually.
Yeah. When you were doing the whole stencil thing, I'm just curious, how were you actually making stencil? How were you transferring the digital image onto a stencil, and then were you just making them, like, by hand, or?
Yeah, I would cut them by hand with, like, a knife.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you would take, like, a printed version of your digital sketch and then just, like, cut the stencil?
Yeah, or sometimes just wing some bits of it also.
Okay.
But yeah, it was really long time of cutting and painting. It was really intensive work. But what I like about it also is, like, you plan carefully each stage. So when you execute it, you can, your mind can just go away, because there's no real decision to take while you're doing it.
Yeah.
And I find, like, painting with a brush, like a normal painter would do, very stressful, because any
mistakes,
kind of,
yeah,
but in the same time, it's what makes a painting nice. But I kind of like the fact that it's 80% control, and maybe I will allow a bit of, you know, unknown to get in.
Yeah.
And that's what I liked about stencil, because it allowed me to, you know, create something, and then it would be really long to execute it, but, you know, it's kind of a meditation form also. So I really liked about it, and now I tend to get away a bit from it, but I think it makes sense. You know, I used to do stencil actually when I was a teenager also. I was a bit into graffiti and this kind of stuff, and
yeah,
and so stencil was always there in a way.
Yeah. What's your favorite place to climb?
To climb?
Mm.
That's really tricky. I'm going to say Catalonia right now, because that's where I spend most of my time, and that's what I can access. But yeah.
Do you have a specific place that you like to go?
It changed a lot with season. So the best condition will be in different crags at different season, or even time of the day. So I have a few crags I go a lot, but I think the one I spend a lot of time currently is called Montserrat. And some really impressive kind of mountains, just 1 hour out of Barcelona, and it's really beautiful.
Do you climb by yourself, or do you usually, like, have
partners? I climb with friends.
Okay. Yeah. It could be quite dangerous to climb by yourself, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you have favorite art books?
I do collect art books.
Uh-huh. As many artists and illustrators. Yeah.
I don't know if I have one favorite, but this is a tough question. I don't really like book about illustration, like modern illustration. I tend to like things that are more ancient, or a book about some painters. I don't know. For example, I love Félix Vallotton, or you know. So I have my favorite books that are probably monographs of, you know, yeah, dead painters, basically.
Do you have a few that you can give examples of, or no?
Yeah, well, definitely the Félix Vallotton one is a good one. I obviously like Hopper.
Edward Hopper, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. It's hard to drop names like that, but I think those two that are the first that come to my mind are probably... Love Hokusai, like Japanese prints, especially from the beginning of the 20th century. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff I like. It's hard to pick one thing. I also like photography.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah,
architecture. It's quite diverse. I don't really focus on illustration at all.
Yeah, yeah, that's really cool. Well, Thomas, it was really nice to talk to you. And thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to do this.
Well, thanks to you. It was a pleasure to chat with you, and thanks for having me.
Thank you. And that was my conversation with Thomas D'Anthony. If you're in London, I'd urge you to consider attending, or at least spreading the news about the artist show that Thomas is organizing, Touchwood. The details and the website for the event will be listed in the show notes for today's episode. Also, if you like Thomas's thoughts and what he had to say, and you want to purchase something nice for your walls, you should check out his online store, thomasdenthonyshop.com. Thomas didn't ask me to promote his store. It's just too good not to share, and there's plenty of totes, mini prints, and large limited edition prints for you to bookmark or buy. So check that out. Also, if you want to help the podcast, please post a review or rating of the show on iTunes/Apple Podcast if you can. It helps me get some nice feedback, and I'm not asking you for a 5-star review, and it lets iTunes know that the show is getting attention. I've said it before, but I'll say it again. I really love hearing from you, so do share your thoughts, feedback, or anything that's on your mind with me. You can message me on Instagram at Illustration Hour, or tweet at IHPod, or you can send me an email to illustrationhourpodcast@gmail.com. illustrationhourpodcast@gmail.com. I'm all ears. Okay, so next week I'll be sharing my interview with the British illustrator and animator, Laurie Rowan. His work is amazing. If you're not familiar with it, you should check it out and enjoy. It's really addictive and inventive stuff. But until then, I hope you have a creatively fulfilling week.